You're a farmer or rancher. Your success depends on the weather, which means certain things are out of your control, such as rain, hail, fire, crop failure, and other unforeseen conditions. But you have a business to run. Protect yourself and insure your risk with American Ag Credit, so you can rest easy knowing that we'll be there for you no matter what tomorrow brings. American Ag Credit. Money for agriculture.
Good morning, Napa. This is Tia Butts, and you're listening to Farmers Fresh Hour on KVON 1440 AM radio. We'd love to thank our sponsor, American Ag Credit Money for Agriculture, for bringing this show to you today. And I am joined by...
I'm Greg Cole. I'm the former chef owner of Celadon and Cole's Chop House, and I'm the proud... I'm going to call myself the culinary director of the Napa Farmers Market.
Exactly. All those great chef demos. And we also have in studio today...
Good morning. This is Kara Mae Woolidge. I am the Napa Farmers Market Assistant Manager and Education Outreach Director.
Awesome. Thank you both for being here.
Thank you, guys. It's good,
as usual.
It's good to be here.
What a great way to start the day.
Exactly. You know, it's Hispanic Heritage Month, and some of our vendors with Hispanic heritage include Esquivel Organic Farms, Mi Fiesta Catering Company, Platanito Latin, J&J Ramos, and many more. And today we're going to be welcoming Patricia Rodriguez in a little while of Rodriguez Farms as our first guest, which they're known for their wonderful strawberries and other berries.
Delicious berries.
Delicious. And but Kara Mae, I want you to tell us more because, again, Hispanic Heritage Month, how is the market involved aside from all of our wonderful vendors being a part of our every week market?
Right. Well, obviously, the first way we're involved is shopping at the market is the best way to spice up your cuisine with some local ingredients. And what we're doing special this market day on Saturday the 15th, we'll be having lovely decorations, so it might be a little bit more colorful than usual at the market. And I'm actually going to be heading to the Fiesta de Molino at the Bale Grist Mill. And that's going to be a free community event for everyone up in St. Helena at the Bale Mist Grill. It's from 10 a.m. or sorry, we're having the local radio in here. It's crazy. It's a free community event, and it's up in St. Helena at the Bale Mist Grill from 12 to 5. There's going to be ranchero music, lots of mariachis, and also a health fair. So we, as the Napa Farmers Market, will be up there talking about what we have at the market, hoping people come down. We're going to have fun giveaways, games, and prizes to play, and also just letting people know about our Market Match program. And the Market Match program is what we have for low-income families that have CalFresh. CalFresh is the national, it's called SNAP, which is Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, and here we call it CalFresh because in California we have to do something, you know, our own way. And so CalFresh families are able to come to the Napa Farmers Market and use their CalFresh benefits. They swipe their card, and then the market actually doubles the amount that they're able to spend on fresh and local produce. So basically, it's a two-for-one program. So folks can come, they swipe their EBT card, they take out $10, but then they get $20 in tokens to spend at the market. So it's pretty spectacular.
Awesome, it's an awesome, awesome program. And you know, we love... being able to do this for the community and having more and more people have access to fresh produce.
Of course, and that's for everyone. And there's a lot going on in the Valley for Napa Valley Latino Heritage Month. So Sunday, September 16th, is actually Mexican Independence Day. It's the Woo-hoo! Grito. And so that's going to kick off a month-long celebration here in the Valley. There are lots of events. And for more information on that, the best thing to do is go to nvlatinoheritage.org. They have a wonderful event calendar. There's a lot of free community cultural events all the way from September 15th to October 15th.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for filling us in on that. Who are some of the producers that I missed? Can you think of any others that we have at the market that are of, you know, Latino or Hispanic heritage?
You know, it's funny because what I've done is we created some signs that say "Hola, hablo español aquí." So our Spanish speaking folks know that people, which vendors speak Spanish, so they can feel comfortable going up to them. And so, you know, it's kind of funny. You don't really know who the usual suspects are, because I put them up at folks that I knew speak Spanish. And then some of our other vendors were like, hey, I speak Spanish too. So you never really know.
I love it. We're definitely very bilingual at the farmer's market. So there's no need to be shy.
We speak the language of fruits and vegetables, which is beyond
it's universal.
Language. Exactly.
Well, speaking of fruits and vegetables, as I said, our first guest is going to be Patricia Rodriguez of Rodriguez Farms. And just to give you a little bit of background on that, Rodriguez Farms started in 1991 with 3 acres of strawberries. They're down on the coast in Watsonville, overlooking the ocean. So I can just imagine that, having driven down that way. I'm sure many of you have gone down there too.
And that's in Santa Cruz County, right?
Yeah, exactly. Very close on the way to Monterey. So it should be beautiful.
Yeah.
We're going to go to a quick commercial break. We'll get Patricia on the line, and hopefully we've gotten Greg's
headphones working. I think they're kind of working.
Yes. No, for our listeners out there, you didn't see all the craziness behind the scenes here. Hopefully we played it cool.
The excitement of live radio.
Exactly.
I don't know if it's my headphones or the fact that I sat front row at Sammy Hagar in 1981.
Wow.
But I can't hear very well.
Repercussions still happen.
Oh my gosh, I love it. All right, we'll be back shortly. Stay tuned.
As a farmer or rancher, you know that agricultural land is not like other real estate. We know that too. Come see the experts in agriculture, American Ag Credit. Whether you're buying property, building, or making improvements, American Ag Credit is here to help with fixed rates, variable rates, long and short-term loans. Unique solutions tailored to your unique needs. Visit us online at agloan.com. American Ag Credit, money for agriculture.
And I don't know about you guys, but if I'm going to be full, I want to be full of berries.
That sounds good.
Just
better,
call me jam
better
at
berries
that point.
Yeah. Wow.
Well,
that
I'm hoping good. We have Patricia on the line. Are you here with us, Patricia?
Yes, I am.
Oh, fantastic. Thank you so much for calling in. You know, we were saying earlier that you started in 1991 at Rodriguez Farms with a few acres of strawberries, and you're down in Watsonville, but we're hoping you can give us a little bit more background. As you know, it's Hispanic Heritage Month is kicking off, and we are celebrating our vendors that have Hispanic heritage. And so tell us a little bit about your history.
I'm first generation, born in Watsonville, and my family comes from Mexico, and my husband was born and raised in Mexico, and he came here in his early 20s, and we both met working at a farm picking berries with our families.
That's fantastic. That's really wonderful. And, you know, how is it different? I mean, have you gotten some insight from your husband about what it was like growing berries in Mexico before they came to the U.S.?
Yes. Well, what's different is here, you know, with, I think, better equipment like tractors and machinery and things like that, that they couldn't afford to have back in Mexico. We have the rows where the tractors make the beds. And the rows of the berries that are higher.
Yes.
And so back in Mexico, they didn't have the tractors to do that, so they were just grown without that. And when they had rain, it flooded. And they had to go in, like, take off their shoes. And, you know, we talk about, you know, us here feeling, yeah, it's a very difficult job to pick berries here. But he's like, no, it was harder there because... You know, we didn't have the rows, so the whole acreage was pretty flooded, and we just had to go in the morning, you know, take off our shoes and socks and go in barefoot and go in the mud.
Yeah, well, we appreciate your hard work, because I was just talking about the berries are not only delicious, they are very healthy in terms of fiber and vitamins, so we appreciate you bringing them to us, no matter what it takes.
Yes, and, you know, of course, nowadays, with more advanced technology, it's a little bit easier than, you know, what it was before, but it's still, nevertheless, you know, a very difficult job for the people who harvest the berries.
Exactly. So, again, tell us a little bit. How many acres do you have now?
We rotate every year because it's healthier for berries, you know, to grow in land that was rested the previous season. So every, you know, we have an average of close to 70 acres.
That's quite a lot. That's
mm-hmm.
a lot of acreage. And how many different types of berries are you growing?
We grow strawberries, blackberries, raspberries, and off and on we grow some golden berries if we can get the plant.
Patricia, this is Greg. I'm also a board member and I'm a chef. And I'm just wondering, when you don't plant strawberries, when you take a year off, what do you plant in that field in the off years?
Most often fava bean, or, you know, some, we get recommendations from, you know, the companies, since everything is certified organic. We buy product from these companies that only have organic material. And they, every year, they do studies and have recommendations for us for plants that would benefit the soil and the berries during the off season.
Right. I know that
fava beans.
Yeah, fava beans are a great nitrogen fixing plant. And so when you grow the fava beans, do you grow them for, do you harvest the crop and bring them to the farmer's market also?
No, we don't.
Okay.
We let other people, there's other people, neighbors, or, you know, people that would like to take them, and we let them do that. We like to take a little break during
right.
the
oh,
that's
yeah,
a nice
no,
community service.
Yeah.
Patricia, I have a question about berries. You mentioned gold berries. And when I was looking into berries, they said that raspberries, although we normally see red, also come in black, purple, and gold. Is that what you were talking
yes.
about? And gold berries, what do they
yes.
look like?
They're like a medium or lighter tone yellow berry that has like a golden hint to it.
Wow.
Yeah, I remember when I was in the kitchen at Domaine Chandon 30 years ago, 25 years ago, we got in the golden, they were called fall gold raspberries, and it was a golden raspberry. And it was so neat. I had never seen one before. It was just amazing to hold a raspberry and to eat one and to have it that color. I love fruit that's not the color you expect, like a white carrot or mm-hmm. a gold raspberry or
yellow watermelon.
Kind of now your berries, you don't, you keep in the same plant year, the raspberries year after year.
Yes, yeah, so the raspberries
right.
can stay.
Yeah.
Can you tell us, you talked about the fact that you're organic. Tell us what the difference is for people out there who may not know. What is the difference between organic and non-organic strawberries or berries?
Well, that's, you know, very important, because nowadays we feel a lot of consumers are confused about it. And so when farmers that are not certified, I think the key word here is certified organic, because what it means to be certified is that you've gone through an organization that will do, you know, they have the people who are going to come out and inspect your soil and inspect your fruit and make sure they find no traces of any chemical or anything else that is not natural, comes from, you know, something natural. So what they do is that they also use the pesticide use reports from the counties for the land, because anytime you're going to apply anything to your soil, it has to be documented and reported to your county ag commissioner's office. So they base it off, you know, the records they have and everything to make sure you're clean and free of any pesticide or chemical. And then, you know, if you pass all these different steps, then you become certified organic. And now some people that are not certified organic can call their, you know, fruit natural or any other wording, but that doesn't mean they've gone through all of these steps and it's certified. So what you need to look for, if you are interested in having something that is, you know, truly free of any pesticide or chemical, is that the people who are selling it are certified organic.
And I think physically you have those white signs. It's like a white background with green lettering
yes.
that says CCOF. Is that the right acronym?
Yes, yes, yes.
So if people need a visual cue, of course they can ask any of our vendors, but that's another way to keep your eye out for what's certified organic. So it's really, really organic. Now I want to hear, I understand that you are always testing different natural practices, and you've created some kind of vacuum for bugs.
Yes, my husband's dad was a mechanic, and he liked to build different machinery. So from that, my husband got some, just knowledge of working with equipment and tractors. So what he did is that at the beginning, it was very challenging. We didn't know how to grow organic, and when you get a pest or some disease, if you don't use a chemical, sometimes you lose your whole crop. So at the beginning, we did lose a lot of, you know, fruit, because we didn't have the knowledge of, you know, what to use or what was best And so what he decided to use, you know, to create some type of a suction or literally a vacuum to adapt to our tractor, because a lot of these pests were just there daily, and it didn't matter, you know, what he did. They were just there. So he started this, and it worked. And to this day, we still use it every day. We, you know, we have this tractor with a vacuum that sucks, you know, has the same, you know, method that you vacuum your carpet, and it goes through our farm daily.
That's really pretty cool. I'm just trying to envision what that looks like, this gigantic hoover, you know, going over the vines.
What happens to the bugs? Where do they go?
They disappear.
Okay. They disappear. You know, as a chef in the restaurant kitchen, we love getting organic produce. And one of the things that comes with organic produce quite often is bugs. And so, you know, you have to, as you handle them, you have to perhaps change how many times you wash the lettuce or whatever. And every once in a while, especially in lettuces, a little caterpillar might sneak through the third wash and end up on someone's plate. And, you know, of course, as a food preparer, you're embarrassed by it. But at least you say, well, you know, it's organic. So
that's a good thing.
Yeah.
The bugs have good taste.
Yeah,
they know what's up.
That's right.
So what's the season for strawberries? When do you pick? Tell us that process.
Well, the season has been somewhat extended from what I remember or what I was used to growing up. People used to plant maybe in November, and that was it. And then, you know, you had berries maybe late April through October. And then, you know, as time went by, and, you know, especially as selling out to farmers markets that are open year-round, we wanted to somehow extend that season. So then, you know, we didn't come up with that. Someone did, and just tried planting at different times of the year to hopefully, you know, get berries or, you know, to extend that production. So now, you know, we can start planting October through maybe, you know, early December. So that means if weather permits, as long as we don't get consistent rain, then we can have berries maybe as early as March.
And Patricia, how many varieties of berries do you grow on your farm?
Strawberries, we grow Albion because in the past years we've tried different varieties, and this one seems to be the one that looks better and holds better when you travel with it, you know, the way we do from our farm to the market.
And you have a unique climate there, the coastal sort of influence on the right big on the ocean. So I think Albions are a strain that does well.
Yes, and we have sometimes when our production comes in, we're not able to sell everything at farmers market, so we take some into a local co-op, a cooler, and they want volume. So then we also grow a newer variety that's called Monterey, and that production is like almost twice as much. So you don't get the quality that you get in the Albion or the flavor.
So what do we see generally at the Napa farmers market?
You'll see Albion.
Okay.
That's what we take to the farmer's market.
Right.
And you know, Albion is just a very healthy, large-sized berry. And when we introduced it into the farmer's market, a lot of our customers just looked at us like, wait, are these organic? Because they're just beautiful and they're big. They're huge.
So
I have to talk to our customers and explain to them, you know, this is just like apples, you know, where some varieties are small, some are larger. So sometimes, you know, now we feel that we've got it down to like, okay, we know how to grow organic berries. So we can produce some very good-looking berries that to some people, you know, a lot of people still have, you know, that kind of idea that to be organic, they have to be crooked and small and kind of ugly-looking. So when we come out, you know, to the markets with these large, beautiful, you know, berries, they're like, are you sure they're organic?
Well, that's I didn't even know there were different varieties of strawberries. So thank you for educating me.
Yeah, well, there's a June bearing for strawberries. I think like a sequoia, which tend to come to market in June. But then there's other ones that grow throughout the year. I love the Albions because they're sweet and they're delicious, but they do have just a little bit of sourness to them. There's sort of this great combination
of
tartness. Yeah, that the sweet and sour that you know they're so delicious, but that little hint of tartness kind of makes them more of a complete flavor, and they're so good. I think that when you're in the grocery store looking at the berries, quite often, you know, they're beautiful when you they look, they're sweet, but you don't have that full round flavor that your berries have and that you might get from organic farmers market berries. They're really, really superior.
Patricia, why don't you tell us, how do we choose the best tasting berries? You know, sometimes you go to the market and some seem a little firmer than others. Others might be soft. You know, is there an art to that, or what tips can you give us?
Well, what happens is that they're going to have, you know, a different texture look depending on the season or, you know, depending on the months of the year. So, for example, when we start, they're firm because we don't get a lot of sun in our area. And even though, you know, they can be fully ripe, they still don't get the type of ripeness they get, like, during the peak of the season, which would be maybe, like, you know, later May through September, because they'll become, like, a darker red, and they are a bit softer, and that just has to do with that, you know, we have more sun, and they, you know, more, a certain type of ripeness that makes them softer.
That's really interesting,
it depends on the time of the year, but as long as, like, for example, in our farm, we don't pick the berries until they're fully ripe, because this is a fruit that does not ripen after you mm-hmm. pick it, unlike, you know, bananas or other fruits that will. So for us, you know, we want to take our customers or provide our customers with a fully ripe berry, because that's the only way you're going to get the full flavor of this, you know, of this fruit.
I have a follow-up question to that. So because my berries don't last very long because they get eaten very quickly. So that's,
same here.
This might not be a problem for me, but what are some recommendations for storage or use of berries? One thing I heard is that you shouldn't wash berries until you're ready to eat them, and I'm imagining that's because they could get moldy or damaged. Or do you have any tips on how to make the most of our berries once they come home with us?
Yes, I actually, you know, have that answer from my customers. I have customers that have been buying from us, you know, since we started. And what they tell me is that the best way to store them is you put them in an airtight container with some dry paper towels under and over them, and you seal it. And, yes, you don't wash them because berries do get moldy from, you know, getting wet from moisture. So the paper towels will absorb the moisture, and you wash them until you eat them.
Wow, okay.
That's a great tip. I've not heard that before, so I'm going to follow
that.
Because often,
this is what customers tell me. Like, you know, I don't have to obviously store them or something like that. But most of them, that's what they're saying. And I think, you know, some of my customers that I've shared this with have said, yes, that works. Get a nice, you know, airtight container, and you just put your paper towels, put the berries in them, and seal it. And they say it'll last up to a week fresh.
Now, should it go into the refrigerator, or should it not?
Yes, into the refrigerator, yes.
Great.
All right, last a week, that's more than enough time. You can come back to the market and get some more. So
absolutely. And I think that's a longer than I haven't been storing them that way, so that explains why my berries don't last that long. Hence why I'm always trying to eat them very quickly. Can you tell us, what's your favorite preparation tip or technique for berries?
You know, to be honest, I just like eating them on their own.
Right? That's the best.
Is there a lot of eating that happens while you're picking?
But I love chocolate, so I've got to say probably my favorite way of eating them is I like to buy the Guittard semi-sweet chocolate.
Yeah.
Melt some and just dip them in that. And I think that's my favorite combination.
What's not to like?
That sounds good.
I was like, that doesn't sound too
bad.
That's
maybe you've invented something there, but maybe we could dip the strawberries in chocolate. That's a great combination.
Greg, how about you? How do you like to use your strawberries?
You know, I like brown sugar and sour cream. And
ooh.
I take a little sour cream. I add a little bit of lemon juice to it, a little touch of sugar just to sweeten it up, and a pinch of salt. Whip that up, and then I dip the strawberries in the sour cream, and then roll them in the brown sugar, and then eat them. And they're so
okay.
good.
Now wow.
Yeah. That's going to happen later.
I did
house.
A cooking demo with that last year at the market, and it's so simple. You know, I felt guilty because I wasn't really cooking much or anything, but it's so good. It's such a classic combination, like chocolates and strawberries and brown sugar and cinnamon.
Greg,
wow.
Simple is better sometimes. You know, yeah. I think folks might get intimidated by
right.
some of the cooking demos.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and we always hear about strawberries with balsamic, too.
Yeah,
you know,
good.
Or
pepper.
In salads.
Yeah.
Yeah, so delicious.
Yeah, that's awfully good, too, especially of aged balsamic. A good sweet mm-hmm. balsamic with strawberries and a little fresh cracked pepper is fantastic.
That's wonderful. Patricia, as the season sort of winds down, do you ever turn large quantities of your strawberries into jam?
You know, I haven't. I feel guilty for that.
No, I was just curious.
I'm just so busy that it's just difficult. So I always end up just donating or just, you know, my family, friends come over and customers, everybody around me makes jam with the berries and I get it from them.
That's right.
Well, see, you don't have to then.
Yeah. You've got resources.
You earned it. Yeah.
Yes, I get very good, you know, jam and different sorts of, you know, combinations of jellies that, you know, friends and family do. I'm saying, okay, you know, I don't have to do this. I don't think I've ever really tried. I think once or twice I tried it and it wasn't as good as my friend. So I'm thinking, okay, I can just give her the berries and she's happy to, you know, get them and make some for both of us.
Well, you're the producing expert in terms of berries, and then that's really what leads to the excellent jam. So I think there's a you know, trade-off in labor there.
Well, Patricia, thank you so much for joining us on Farmer's Fresh Hour this morning. We really appreciate your time, and we look forward to enjoying more of your delicious berries of all kinds at Napa Farmer's Market.
Oh, well, thank you. We've been at Napa Market since it opened, and, you know, we have built some good relationships there and with our customers, and we love being there.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Patricia. It's an honor to have you as one of our vendors, and thanks for joining us on the radio today.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you. All right, great. Well, I'm like salivating thinking about berries and sour cream. So we're going to take a short break and we will be back with our next guest, Chef Sandra Richardson. But this is Farmer's Fresh Hour brought to you by American Ag Credit, money for agriculture.
You're a farmer or rancher. Your success depends on the weather, which means certain things are out of your control, such as rain, hail, fire, crop failure, and other unforeseen conditions. But you have a business to run. Protect yourself and insure your risk with American Ag Credit so you can rest easy knowing that we'll be there for you no matter what tomorrow brings. American Ag Credit. Money for agriculture.
Welcome back. We are here at KVON 1440 AM with Farmers Fresh Hour. We are the Napa Farmers Market. I'm Tia Butts.
I'm Greg Cole.
And I'm Kara May, and I just wanted to give a quick shout out to my friend Antonia and her class. They are listening in today because they are doing a whole body health assignment. So, hi guys, how you doing?
Hey guys, because thanks for listening.
We motivate whole body health assignments.
That's right.
There's no doubt about that.
Love it.
Well, we're joined in the studio of a friend of the market, Sandra Richardson, who did several cooking demos for us last year for the listeners who are familiar with our cooking demos at the Napa Farmers Market. Sandra did quite a few, and also provided some help for us with the market with our new website and some marketing planning, and she's joining us again this coming Saturday.
Woohoo! We can't wait. Awesome. And I understand, like, you are the person to come to, like, if I have a tight budget and I can't figure out what to cook, or I have a party guest coming to my house for a dinner party that I don't particularly like. That one I was really intrigued with. Huh. I want to hear your answers on that. But tell us a little bit about what Constrained Gourmet is.
Sure. Thank you for having me, Tia and Greg. Constrained Gourmet is a resource for home chefs who face everyday constraints and want to maintain a gourmet lifestyle. I also help businesses and nonprofits navigate constraints around special events and fundraisers by providing strategy and design for their event. I believe that all success starts with a good strategy, even if you're a home chef doing a dinner party or you're a business hosting a special event.
Fantastic.
Wonderful.
Well, I think we can all use some good tips like that and some help in that regard. We're not all Greg Cole,
no.
I guess,
no.
Put it that way.
And
we
I don't,
all wish we could be.
Well, I'm not sure if you want to be me or not. But yeah, having a plan and having some strategy is a great idea no matter what you're doing, if it's a dinner for two or a dinner for 400.
Absolutely.
I was watching a little news today about the hurricane, and Jose Andreas, the really famous chef, was on.
He's incredible.
He was incredible. And they were talking about the millions, or, you know, 1 point some million meals they served in Puerto Rico after the hurricane. And the organization, the strategy to get that together, to pull that off, mm-hmm. is not something you have to do at home every day. But he was constrained, and he is a gourmet.
Exactly.
And for him to do what he did, it's just so incredible. But a little bit of planning, a little bit of experience, mm-hmm. a little foresight can go a long way.
Well, it sounds like there's a lot of psychology behind what you do.
Yes,
you know?
Yes.
And tell us about that.
Well, when you experience constraints, such as not having enough time or having a tight budget or missing an ingredient right before dinner, it can produce fear and stress and anxiety. And so there is psychology that's needed to overcome those feelings. And, you know, there's kind of two camps in cooking. There's the art versus the science. And if you're somebody who really likes sous vide, you know, you're probably on the scientific side. I tend to be more on the artistic side. But I'm watching actually two Japanese food shows right now that deal with the psychology of food.
Wow. What are they called? Can you share the name?
Yeah, they're on Netflix. And one of them is called Samurai Gourmet.
Okay.
And that focuses on the feeling that food provides. And then there's another called Midnight Diner in Tokyo, and that's the feeling, the healing of food and the camaraderie around it.
Well, that's interesting.
So it's just really interesting, you know, to kind of take yourself through that process and say, which camp am I in? And, you know, I have a personal example I can share with you. Years ago, when I was not as experienced as I am now, I was planning this huge dinner party, and I got terrible news that day. And it was like the kind of news where you just wanted to go home and like put the covers over your head and not come out for a while.
Exactly. Or open like a big bag of potato chips and Twizzlers or eat the whole container pint of ice cream.
Exactly.
Not that I've done those things.
That's never happened.
None of us have. But, you know, it was like one of those kind of things. And I remember going through the process of telling myself, you know, you can't do that because you've got all these people coming. And number one, you have to think about your guests because they're also putting in effort. And you don't want to be the Debbie Downer, you know, that brings everybody down at your party. And secondly, I really thought to myself, I was like, you know, bad news stays. It's going to be here tomorrow. So I'll just, you know, go on and I'll just deal with it tomorrow. And, you know, it's kind of those things that you have. It's experiential in a way, but, you know, it's really, really challenging yourself to deal with the constraints and kind of get over it.
Right. And
it sounds like a strategy for resilience.
So,
yes.
You know, facing our adversity
exactly.
and making that. And food, bringing people together can be so comforting mm-hmm. and be a resource in that way.
Exactly, exactly. And so, you know, there is stress and anxiety sometimes when you're dealing with things that are challenging, but it's the, you know, experience of getting over it, doing it once, and then the next time it won't be as much of a challenge.
So you know, we live in a city and where there are a lot of great, talented, experienced folks like Greg.
One happens to be sitting here.
Yes. And then, and I think also because we're a foodie city mm-hmm. generally and mm-hmm. have a reputation as a foodie city, I think that people must assume that everyone knows how to cook.
Right.
Right. But I venture to guess that there's still a lot of people out there who are seriously intimidated, even here in Napa, mm-hmm. At cooking or even venturing to the Napa Farmers Market. So what kind of advice would you have for our market goers that might make them feel more confident either at the market or in the kitchen?
Yes. Great question. And I have techniques on my website as well for this particular question. But number one, I would say think of this like a project at work, where you wouldn't do everything all in one day. You know, the same goes for doing an event or a party, is really be organized. And I have on my website dinner party plans, and I take people through starting 30 days out, all the things you should do in order, and, you know, how to kind of deconstruct it so it's not so big and doesn't seem so challenging. It's really kind of the biggest mistake that people who are inexperienced make is trying to do everything at the last minute. And I'm sure Greg can back me up here that restaurants don't do that. I mean, they don't do everything at the last, and caterers don't either. So don't try to do that to yourself because you're going to get really stressed. So, you know, break it up into manageable pieces. Number two, don't ever try a recipe for the first time if you're having a dinner party.
Oh my gosh, I am so guilty of that too.
That's probably
something that people do, and it's, you know, it.
When I see people do that on cooking shows, I'm like, what is wrong with you?
Yeah. Like, why are you taking this risk right now?
Yeah, exactly. You know, have a stable of recipes that you know how to cook really well and you're comfortable with, and then that you won't be nervous. My third technique is, if you're inexperienced, don't make a recipe with more than 5 to 7 ingredients. You know, don't do the recipe that has 2 pages of steps and, you know, ingredients that you have to buy, because it's probably a little too complex, especially when you're in a stressful situation. So keep it simple. Also, be relaxed, because there's really nothing worse if you've ever been to somebody's house for a dinner party and they're really nervous. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it makes you...
It puts your guests, makes
exactly.
them uneasy.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, after a few glasses of wine, I'm sure that relaxes, but you really don't want to...
Always start them. With a strong cocktail.
Exactly. And another thing I would suggest is create a style for yourself, an entertaining style. And so, you know, over the years, I've created my own that I'm really comfortable with. And, you know, I know that the guests who come to my home appreciate. But, you know, for some people, it's more formal. For some people, it's more relaxed. I mean, if you're the relaxed type, be a great barbecue griller. You know, you don't have to bring out the good china, you know, every time you have a party. But the point is, once you get a style that you're comfortable with, you'll be really relaxed about it. And then finally, I'm really into the hyperlocal movement, and I would say use hyperlocal, quality, seasonal ingredients and let them shine. So, you know, even if you're inexperienced, think about eating a tomato in season and out of season. An in-season tomato tastes completely different, and you don't need to do much to it. Salt, pepper, a little olive oil, it's beautiful. And so if you can really embrace that movement, it's going to make your cooking a lot easier. So those are a few techniques, and there's more on my website.
I didn't like tomatoes until I was 24 years old, because I probably only had those like pink mealy store-bought tomatoes. Mm-hmm. And I was actually living in Winters with a friend, and her family owns a farm out there. It wasn't a tomato farm, but they had growing fresh tomatoes. And she said, you don't like tomatoes? You have to eat this. And I did. And I've never looked back. You know, it was that fresh tomato right out of the garden that completely changed my mind.
And it's just like your berries. You know, that's when you have a fresh berry in season, you can have it just on something simple like Greg's, you know, whipped sour cream.
Exactly.
You don't have to do a lot to it.
Right, right. Yeah, and that's kind of the beauty of the farmers market. When you're shopping with at the market with our farmers, you get a chance to talk to them directly. And they'll say, oh, these just came in. These are in their peak of their season. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like right now, the apples have been so amazing. The corn continues to be good. I mean, but it's so great to talk to our farmers and say, you know, I'm looking for this. Like our apple guide is incredible. He has this variety called, it's a Hawaiian apple. And it has this perfumed flavor, kind of quince, and it's sweet.
Do you
and
remember the name of it? I haven't tried
Hawaiian.
This one.
It's called Hawaiian.
Oh, it's called Hawaiian. Yeah. Oh, I have to go
Royal
try
Hawaiian
it.
Or Golden
okay.
Hawaiian, I think.
All right.
It's a golden apple, but it's a later season apple. So when I was looking forward to that this year, and I asked him, I said, hey, Stan, when are those little Hawaiian apples? He said, oh, they'll be here in a few weeks. So if you get to know the farmers and you develop a relationship with them, you know, you could say, I want to make an apple pie, and I need an apple that's tart. And he'll recommend, this is the apple to use. This is the best apple, whether it's a Gravenstein or whatever it may be. So having that resource when you're in the grocery store, you know, however hard they try, there's never a farmer standing there to ask questions to. But at the farmer's market, there is. So that's the beauty of what Sandra is saying is, you know, getting stuff in season, it's a lot easier to cook well with good ingredients that have flavor.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And I think that's the beauty of the chef demos that you put together, too. Most of those chef's demos, not only are they featuring produce from the market, but they are also, I think, fairly simple recipes
to
pull
together.
We
try to keep them. Yeah, yeah, we try to keep them simple. Every once in a while, we get carried away. But yeah.
You got to take it easy on us out here.
I understand. Well, and plus for the people doing the demo, when you're in the middle of a parking lot, you know, over a propane stove, you can't do a lot of, you can't make a souffle out there. You could try, but it won't work. So, you know, part of the constraints of being on that demo stage is creating something that's great, that's flavorful, that's attractive, but that you could do fairly simply. So,
right, exactly.
And seasonal produce or seasonal ingredients is the key.
So yeah,
Sandra, absolutely. What was there something about preparing foods for someone that you don't like? Is that what I
heard? Yes, I saw that on your website, and so I wanted to ask about that too. Like,
does it involve arsenic? No, I'm
yeah, yeah. I'm like, you know, I'm assuming it's like, you know, whatever the sister of a brother of whoever that you know they're going to bring because they're family or whatever the situation may be, and you're like,
Uncle Charlie.
Oh, I have to deal with crazy Uncle Charlie.
Yeah, first of all, I'm not suggesting poisoning anyone.
just to be clear.
But again, that's a constraint. I mean, I'm sure everyone has been in a situation where, you know, someone comes to your house for dinner and you may not particularly enjoy their presence. And, you know, I've seen people do different things where they hide in the kitchen, you know, so they don't have to interact or, but my suggestion is to find a way to alleviate the stress around having that person at your table for that evening. But remembering that you are the host or hostess, and it has to, you know, it's your responsibility to make it a nice dinner. And so, you know, you can play games, you can have, you know, different kinds of topics ready to discuss that, mm-hmm. you know, are not politics and are not religion that might, you know, make
the
that situation worse.
The lost art of conversation. Or, yeah. Yes.
Exactly. Check your opinions at the door.
Yes.
Or, you know, just saying we're not going to talk about this particular yeah. thing. But, right. you know, also, you know, having friends to help you. I mean, if you have
yeah,
a friend
yeah, sometimes having
there,
a good wingman is
exactly,
like all you need. Yeah.
Exactly. Exactly.
A distraction, you know.
And if you're excited about what you're preparing or the ingredients, that gives you something to talk about.
Exactly.
So instead of talking about the political climate we find ourselves in, you could talk about, well, this variety of tomato was, you know, the seeds were saved by the Amish
exactly.
in the Brandywine Creek of Pennsylvania. And it's such an incredible story. And then you get on talking about something like that.
Exactly.
And potentially getting people involved in the kitchen with
right.
you. You
yeah.
know, and so you're all concentrating your energy on doing something together that's productive rather than maybe the discussion that you're trying to avoid with this person.
Okay. So say you're going to shop the Napa Farmers Market mm-hmm. and you know you are having guests that night and one of them is a really picky eater. So what's your strategy then for shopping the market?
Yeah, I have some of those in my family as well. And, you know, rather than being upset about it, I like looking at it as a challenge, whether people are coming to my house that have food allergies or don't eat this or don't eat that, rather than saying, oh, you know, it's hard for me. I like to say, well, it's a challenge. I'll try and cook, you know, something that they like. And, you know, picky is kind of a general term, so it would, you know, you'd want to know what they didn't like
right.
in particular. But, you know, trying to make things in that case that are simple, mm-hmm. you know, maybe things that are comforting would be a good approach rather than, you know, trying to do something that is a little bit further out there.
I have another one, too. Sorry, I don't mean to, if you guys have questions.
Go
but
for it, Tia.
I have a lot of friends who are either vegetarian mm-hmm. or, you know, gluten-free or whatnot. And, you know, I can usually navigate around it. But every once in a while, I do feel like a little challenged because, oh, I've already made that for them, like every time they've come to my house. You know what I mean? Like the same set of dishes. And so any tips there?
Yeah, I mean, you know, certainly the good old World Wide Web is a great resource for getting ideas and
right.
different concepts. But, you know, I also think that people who have food constraints appreciate that you try, and they're not, you know, in my experience at least, they're not expecting you to be a expert chef in their particular area that, you know, they're whether it's vegan or gluten-free or what have you. And sometimes you can even have something different for them too, and that's acceptable because it's really showing them that you care about them and their
exactly
you know their right. wishes and desires. But
Greg, how do you deal with that?
Well, I just usually will, I cook what I want to have. And if I know I have guests who are, say, a vegan and we're going to have steak, then I'll just have a bunch of mushrooms on the side that I'll saute just for them.
That's a good tip. When we plate up the dish,
and people appreciate the mm-hmm. fact that, you know, they're not freaked out the person next to them is having a steak.
Right.
Because,
right.
you know, typically, and then they're having this portobello mushroom caps or sauteed wild mushrooms. And so they appreciate the fact that you went out of your way. And, mm-hmm. you know, there are so many little cilantro, garlic, vegan, you know, you can't ever make every, I mean, if you have a large party, you just try to do your best.
Right. And I mean, I guess I would say the beauty of the market is that,
yeah.
there is such variety there
variety
in terms
of
fruits
yeah.
and vegetables and ingredients
right.
and even some of the pre-made foods.
Yeah. We have friends who are gluten free, and they're, you know, typically they're fine if you know they won't have bread, and mm-hmm. I won't go out of my way and get gluten free bread. But occasionally, you know, we'll do something. There's some great flour substitutes that are gluten free that you could use for baking, that you could make something. And then if you do that, they're so blown away that they actually get to have pie.
Right.
Because you're using a flour substitute that's gluten free.
Right. Well,
or you can. Tia Ampa is one of our vendors who's new, and that's a gluten free bakery. And I tried one of their chocolate gluten free bundt cakes, mini bundt cakes. It was fantastic.
Oh, good.
That sounds delicious. Yeah. And thanks for bringing them up. That's great.
Yeah. The ingredients have come so far. When the whole gluten free thing first started, it was so bad and it was so hard to cook gluten free. But the progress that's been made in the quality and the ingredients. I mean, the first thing was really like corn flour pasta, and you would try to work with that. And it was so unforgiving. If you cooked it, you know, 2 seconds, not long enough, it was too al dente. And if you cooked it 2 seconds too long, it was mush. There was it wasn't forgiving at all. But the products have improved incredibly in the last 5 or 6 years. So it's gotten a lot easier to cook, you know, good food gluten-free.
I love it. So back to the chef demos. You're coming this Saturday?
Yep. This Saturday.
Yes.
And so what will you be making?
So I am demonstrating a famous Spanish sauce called Romesco. Mm. And it's from Catalonia on the northeastern side of the country, on the Mediterranean, specifically from the city of Tarragona. And the fishermen used to make this sauce, and they would serve it when they, you know, got back to port with the fish that they caught fresh. It's really great because it's red peppers, tomatoes, nuts, some olive oil. And you make this sauce, and it's made all from ingredients that we have right now in season at the market. So it's a great use. But it's also something that's wonderful for people who are busy, because you can make it in advance. And it's also really not that difficult. Traditionally, it was made, you would take green onions and grill them and char them, and then take the char off and then dip that into the Romesco sauce. That's
yes,
the traditional
delicious.
Way to eat it. But it's great with grilled fish, grilled chicken, beef, lamb, all kinds of different things, vegetables. So I think it's going to be fun to learn about it. I really like to try and bring different recipes that use seasonal ingredients, but hopefully that people can learn about something from a different place and a different culture.
Mm-hmm. No, absolutely. And I think like tomatoes seem to really come into their peak almost in like September, October.
Oh,
don't you think?
They're popping off right now.
Yeah, big time. I know even in my own garden, they're just like finally everything's ripening.
Longmeadow Ranch has a big table. It's called Tomato Island. And that's
Tomato
where
Island,
they have
I love
just,
it.
I don't know.
I just want to swim in tomatoes right now.
Yeah.
I love it. Well, Sandra, how do people find you if they want to hire your services, have you cook, give them tips, instructions?
Absolutely. Come to constrainedgourmet.com and you'll be able to contact me. I'm also on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook.
Yes, we're very active supporting the market.
And you have videos too. You've produced a line of videos that are really entertaining, very well done. I mean, in your home kitchen with a glass of wine. And going through recipes, where you show step-by-step cooking instructions on how to do that. Now, did you grow up cooking?
I did.
Do you have inspiration?
I did. My Italian mother is actually visiting me right now, and so I'm taking her everywhere I go. She's actually here today.
I'm waving to her right now.
And she's from northern Italy, from the Veneto region, and she
beautiful
is,
area.
It is.
Beautiful.
It's so beautiful. Yeah. I still have a lot of family.
That's
there.
Romeo and Juliet country for those of
yes.
you who don't know. Okay.
In fact, my parents got married in Romeo and Juliet's castle
Did
in
they?
Verona.
What?
Beautiful.
But, oh my gosh.
It's beautiful.
She really instilled in me this passion for cooking, and you know, we had dinners every night with family. My father inspired my love of eating. So my mother was cooking, my father was eating, so I got both of them.
Yeah. Best of both worlds.
The Italians and the Spaniards and the Portuguese have such a passion for food. I mean, all cultures celebrate food, but I mean, it's so great to go to those countries and it's not just a meal, it's a celebration. Every time you sit down, it could just be a little cup of gazpacho and some sangria or something. It's be simple, but
A spritz if you're in Verona.
Yeah, they just get into
Campari
it.
Spritz.
I love that. My mom was a wonderful cook. We didn't really celebrate food as much. She was Norwegian, very good baker, very but more kind of methodical. You know, it was this step after step, and we had great food as a kid growing up. But it was, I can't say it was a celebratory sort of thing, and maybe that's more of the Norwegian thing, where the Italians are
practical. The Norwegians,
yeah, practical.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's cold right, there. Yeah. Yes. You know, yeah.
The Italians are very passionate.
Yeah, and absolutely.
Last time we went to Italy to see all of my family, I mean, I think we spent about 6 hours at lunch.
That sounds about right. That sounds about right. Yeah, I love it. Well, we've got to take a quick break before we come back. But again, thank you so much, Sandra.
And thank you, Sandra.
For the listeners, Sandra will be doing the demonstration this coming Saturday at 10 a.m. at the Napa Farmers Market, and she'll be doing the Romesco sauce.
Yes, come by. I hope to see you all.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you very much for
thank
having
you,
me.
Thank you, Sandra.
As a farmer or rancher, you know that agricultural land is not like other real estate. We know that too. Come see the experts in agriculture, American Ag Credit. Whether you're buying property, building, or making improvements, American Ag Credit is here to help with fixed rates, variable rates, long and short-term loans. Unique solutions tailored to your unique needs. Visit us online at agloan.com. American Ag Credit, money for agriculture.
Well, welcome back to Farmers Fresh Hour, brought to you by American Ag Credit, Money for Agriculture. You actually have been hearing the sounds of Bruno Grassi, who will be playing at the market on Tuesday, September 25th. I know that's a little farther out. We have a different performer that's coming this Saturday at the market named Stuart Degner. Unfortunately, Stuart doesn't have a CD, so we didn't have any
you
of his music.
You have to come to the market. To
you
hear
have
his
to come. And I will say he's been there several times, and he's great. He does like this acoustic guitar. It's got like a mild hint of jazz, light rock, classic. We hope that you're all appreciating the musicians at the market, which are brought to us courtesy of KVON's sister station, KVYN 99.3, The Vine.
It's nice to have the music back. You know, we didn't have live music last year, and there's been a couple Saturdays this season where the musician's van broke down or something happened. And now that it's back, it's strange when it's not there. So it's really nice
absolutely.
To have
it feels
have
really
it back.
Quiet.
We appreciate KVYN for being our music stage sponsor.
Yeah.
So tell us, what else is happening at the market the next couple of weeks, Karamay?
Yeah, so we hope to see everyone. As you know, we are at the South Napa Century Center on Saturdays and Tuesdays from 8:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. And this Saturday, we have cucumber tasting at 11 a.m.
Ooh, cucumbers.
So we're going to find some awesome cucumbers. I'm going to look for different varieties from our farmers. And another fun fact is that cucumbers are also high in vitamin C. I
didn't know that either.
Right? C is for cucumber. And we have our story time, which is always from 9:30 and then 9:30 and 10:30. And I wanted to put a plug out there for anyone who's interested in being a story time reader. We are in need of story time volunteer readers. So what you can do is go to Community Resources for Children's website. And if you look on their page, there's a volunteer link. So we have some openings for people that can read, and it's a lot of fun. We have books if you need them, or you can bring your own.
And Chef Demos, do you want to touch on what's coming up?
Absolutely. We've got some good demos coming up. So every Saturday at 10 a.m. at the Culinary Center of downtown market, or the Napa Farmers Market. This Saturday, our last guest, Sandra Richardson, will be presenting. Next Saturday, the 22nd, we have Terry Letson. And Terry is the chef owner of Fume Bistro, will be joining us. The week after that, on the 29th, it's National Coffee Week, National Coffee Day. And our own Derek Bromley from Ohm Coffee will be doing a demonstration on coffee, proper brewing, proper techniques, how to enjoy a cup of Joe. And then finally, I'll just go a month out, October 6th, we've got Kevin Folan. And Kevin is one of the partners of our vendor Contimo Provisions, who make incredible sandwiches, cured meats. And so Kevin will be, I don't know what Kevin will be demonstrating, but I'm sure it will be delicious.
Sounds great. Well, that's our show for today. We need to wrap this up, but thank you to American Ag Credit, our sponsor, Money for Agriculture. And for anybody who wants more information, sign up for our newsletter at NapaFarmersMarket.org. We will see you in a couple of weeks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
You're a farmer or rancher. Your success depends on the weather, which means certain things are out of your control, such as rain, hail, fire, crop failure, and other unforeseen conditions. But you have a business to run. Protect yourself and insure your risk with American Ag Credit, so you can rest easy knowing that we'll be there for you no matter what tomorrow brings. American Ag Credit. Money for agriculture.